Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Hustler does not waste time. Somebody with talent, somebody with connections, somebody with some education and some experience, oftentimes they waste time. They feel like they can afford to. They feel like they have permission to. They feel like they've got it figured out. The Hustler says, I don't have a second to waste. And so while you're sleeping, while you're being entertained, I'm beating on my craft. The Hustler says, I'm beating on my craft. The Hustler says, I'm going after it. The Hustler says, I can't afford to miss this moment. I can't afford to overlook this critical time, this crucial opportunity. I'm going to give it everything I have, period. When you've got this Hustler's mentality, you're not looking for a handout. You just know you have to outwork everybody in the room. You got to put the work in after hours. You're not wasting your time being entertained. You're not wasting your time watching TV all day. You're not wasting your time complaining about what you don't have. The Hustler has already come to the conclusion that if they don't have something, they have to become. It's not connections that wins. It's not even education that wins. I can be inundated with information. I can be educated, but with no application. The Hustler moves in a different realm of wisdom, a different realm of application. They're going after it. Everything that they have is on the table.
Are you fighting excuses? Are you fighting low self-esteem? Ladies and gentlemen, get your dukes up. Get your hands up and get ready to fight. See, let me tell you something. Trouble can be a bully, but you better learn how to land the first blow. Lesson number one, acknowledge the fight. Who are you fighting? Who is your battle with? Key number two, what is your strategy to win? Are you going for the knockout blow? Are you going to kill him softly with a couple of jabs? You might be in a situation right now where the doctor said to you that you're not healthy, your body's failing, you might even have cancer. Oh, that's not just a battle. That's going to be a war, ladies and gentlemen. But to win fights, you got to have stamina. You got to be ready to fight and bounce back. Punch and counter punch. Jab and jab back. Let me tell you something. Life is a series of fights. The worst thing you can do is run away from your fights. Because if life is a series of fights and you run away, You just ran away from your life.
I don't know where you're from or where you're listening to me. You may be listening to me in your closet, your bedroom, the gym, the car, the bus, the train, the plane. I don't know where you're going, but I know you are going somewhere. You've got a destination. People that make excuses are not connected to their destination. They don't have an end game. They don't have a goal. You have allowed yourself to become a weak link covered under the blanket of excuses. But I'm just wondering if there's anybody here that has a dream. And if you've made your excuses bigger than your dream, the time is now to apply pressure. It may not be easy, but it's not impossible. This is not a I feel like it today. This is not a I'm motivated for a week. This is an every single day mentality. You may have to work 3 jobs. You may have to lose sleep. You may have to go to college and raise 5 children and still maintain your marriage and work your side hustle. I don't know what your story is, but if you will keep a no excuse mentality, then the sky is not your limit. The sky is your starting point.
Your promotion and your next level is about you getting into this war, getting into this battle and winning. Here's the reality. I don't believe in getting bullied. I believe in altercations. I've been fighting my whole life, and let me tell you something. We're gonna battle, baby, and I want you to do the same thing, because when you get victory, you'll raise your arms up like the champ. When you come over depression, you raise your arms like a champ. When you overcome bankruptcy, you raise your arms like a champ. When you come over divorce, raise your arms in victory. Let me tell you something. You gotta be ready to fight, because your life is all about fights. Here's the reality. Life can be messy, but you gotta clean it up. And you better learn how to fight.
That's just the truth of the matter. I mean, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. We got to get this.
To get people to understand, skills have utility. You don't read a book to get an A on the test. You don't read a book to check something off a list. You read a book to learn something that lets you do something in the real world that other people can't do. And so, Elon Musk has a great quote. You're paid in direct proportion to the difficulty of the problems you solve. So you're learning something so you can solve problems, hard problems, that other people can't solve. And so once you understand, oh, this is mechanical. My brain is designed a certain way. There's a certain path that I have to walk to gain skills. And then skills let me do something other people can't do. And by doing things other people can't do, I'm able to serve myself and the group. That's fulfillment. Fulfillment's the point. It is so mechanistic. It's all just deadly simple. And when I'm giving honest answers, I'm always looping around, this is how the human mind works. And every time I say something controversial, it's always about biology. I'm just like, okay. Like, if you want to fight it, fight it. You're going to die tired, and I will propel myself forward, because I'm not judging what is true. I don't deal with the world the way that I wish it were. I deal with the world the way that it is.
One other thing that we do that I think is extremely powerful is we play a game called No Bullshit, What Would It Actually Take? So once we sit there and go, what is our goal? To build a studio as big as Disney. All right, before you even get started, we sit there and go, what? Like, no BS, don't try and say like the things that we want to be true. But actually, what is true, that what would need to be true in order for us to build a studio as big as Disney? And so we sat there and we said, okay, it's gonna take us to put our own capital in. It's gonna take us to work hard. What does work hard look like? Is it a certain amount of hours? Is it a certain amount of achievements where you put things into place and you make sure you're always incrementally working towards that? Is it that maybe you have to, so this is exactly what we did with Quest. It was, oh, we have to put the house on the line. And that was like the no BS. That's what it's going to take for us to go all in and build Quest Nutrition. And so once we sat there and said, okay, it's going to take us to put our house on the line. It's going to take me at the time to be the supportive wife to come in and help you out. It's going to take no vacations. It's going to mean you're going to need to take a third of your pay cut. Like, we literally sat down and wrote a laundry list of what it's going to take to start in Quest Nutrition. And once we had that list, we just looked at each other and we're like, all right, are we willing to do it? And when the answer is yes, now you just know what you're heading towards. You know the type of path that you're about to approach. And so there's no surprises. There's no all of a sudden him coming home and going, yeah, babe, so the business isn't doing well. And so, oh my God, I'm so sorry, but we lose our house, right? There's no surprise. We've established what we're going to do in order to go for that goal. And in that comes the sacrifices. What are you willing to sacrifice? What are the things that you're okay with putting aside for now? And a lot of that was my self-esteem, my ego of like, I didn't know what I was doing. So every day I'm struggling, I'm trying to figure something out, and I keep failing. But I knew that I had to learn in order to get to the goal that we wanted to get to. So I knew every day I had to get back up. And then the same with him, with the skill sets. What skill sets do I have to learn in order to get to the goal that we want to get to? The thing with excuses is sometimes they're very true, but it doesn't serve you. It doesn't serve your goal. So are you going to let it sit with you, or are you going to find a way around it? So let's say a lot of people's reasoning, which was ours originally when we wanted to make movies, is we don't have enough money. So we're just going to go and do this thing until we have enough money. We don't have enough time. And the truth is, if you play the no BS, what would it actually take? And you say, I don't have enough money. Then you keep going down and go, well, how much money do I need? Okay, what would it take for me to get that money? And sometimes people don't want to look at the answers. So maybe it takes you having to sell your house, move in with your in-laws and rent one of their bedrooms for the next 3 years in order to save your money so that you can go and start a company. Well, some people don't want to do that. Okay, well, at least now you have your answer and you're not sitting there using the excuse that you don't have enough money. You just looked at it and like, oh, for me to get there, I need to live with my in-laws for 3 years. I don't want to do that. And now you've just decided. And now you're not beating yourself up over, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not there yet. Or like with us with Quest, we didn't leave ourselves any room for excuses because we just went down that list of, are we giving this over? Are we doing this? Are we actually showing up? And if the answer is no, then how can you expect to reach your goal?
I don't think of myself as being highly intelligent. I meet minimum requirements. There's no doubt. I don't want people to think I don't think I can, you know, get my way through life. But what I'm good at and what we're good at together is not being right all the time. It's basically learning from your mistakes. So the physics of progress is you come up with a hypothesis that should be as informed as possible. You figure out a way to turn that into something you can actually do. So you're going to run a test. Then you actually run that test. And then this is where most people fall down. You have to lower your psychological defenses to stare nakedly at the results. And oftentimes that's gonna be, you didn't do something well, you didn't think through this right, you made a mistake somewhere. And then if you're willing to do that and you learn from that, then you can re-inform your hypothesis, make it a little bit better, run that whole system again. And once you get in that loop, then you can really make progress. But yeah, the tenacity it takes to face your inadequacies and continue to try, that's where we've succeeded.
It's going to change what you do with the money.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because my family's from India, a state in India called Punjab. And over there, it's a very traditional thing that when you earn this paper dollars, many people will convert this cash into gold because they understand that these paper dollars lose value and it's just paper. So they want to convert it to something real, something tangible, so they will go out and buy gold with it. You have the government and the Fed. The government spends money. Now, where do they get their money? Well, they get the money from taxpayers, people like you, me, people watching this video, through tax dollars.
Now, can we hammer that for a second?
Sure.
The government does not make money. The government takes money from people who are making money.
Right.
Now, that's not necessarily bad because they provide a lot of amazing things,
but
they're not necessarily efficient with their dollars.
You know, you have to understand what someone's role is. If you are a company, right, you have a company, your job is to make a profit, because if you don't have a profit, you're not going to be in business unless you have some other stream of, you know, venture capital debt or something. But if you don't have a profit, you can't continue operating. And so your job is to be as efficient as possible as a company. The government can actually be benefited by being inefficient, because what is the government's job? You have to understand what is their role. If their goal is to create jobs, well then you can be as inefficient as you want and you can achieve that goal. Because if my goal, if I'm the government, I just want to create as many jobs as possible, I can pay people to pick up this mug and put it from the left hand to right hand. I just created a job. You're employed, you have an income, but you're not producing anything of value. And this is where you have to understand, okay, what is that purpose? And so now, you know, if we get away from the politics for a second, the government now spends money. They get money from taxpayers because the government is not a for-profit entity. They don't create a product and sell it for, or create something and sell it for a profit. Instead, people make money and then the government taxes your income. Now, just like anybody else, there's checks and balances. If the government has $1 million, they can only spend $1 million, you would think. But that's not how it works. So the government has $1 million, and what's happening now is they're going to spend significantly more than $1 million. Now, if you have a certain amount of income and you spend more than that, what do you do? Well, you're going to have to subsidize or find that extra cash somewhere. And in the government's case, what they can do is they can go out and look for a loan. It's called a treasury bond. For as long as anyone can remember, have been considered the safest investment anybody can make. Well, what it is you're literally loaning money to the government. But what happens now if there's not enough people out there to loan money to the government? If the government wants trillions and trillions of dollars, if there's not enough people out there to loan that money to the government and they keep wanting to spend more money, you still got to make up this cost. So what do? They call up their friends at the Federal Reserve Bank and they say, hey, we need a $2 trillion loan. And then the Fed's going to say, okay, we got you. Now remember what I said, they're not a reserve. They don't have a cash pile anywhere. So what do? They go to their money printer, boop, 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 and now they can print out $2 trillion. They loan this cash to the government. And now the government got the $2 trillion. The Federal Reserve printed it out of nothing. The government can now take this $2 trillion and spend it in whatever way that they want. It can be inefficient. They can try to create efficient products, but their goal is to hopefully help people. Now, whether they're inefficient or not is a political debate. However, you know, that is what they do. But what happens now when more dollars enter without actual wealth being created? Because we saw this happen in textbook form in 2020 and 2021, where nothing was being produced except money. Well, when more money gets produced, it effectively reduces the value of each individual dollar. This is what inflation is. The word inflation comes from the word inflate. What are you inflating? The monetary supply. So you're increasing the monetary supply, causing the value of each individual dollar to go down, which effectively causes the price of things to go up. And so in 2020, 2021, no one's producing. However, the government is spending money like crazy. Where are they getting this money? The Fed. So the Fed's printing money, giving it to the government. The government's spending it like crazy. Now people are getting money. It's people, it's businesses, it's corporations. This money is being spent, and now everybody is like, wow, I'm sitting at home and I'm rich. You have some people who are getting big unemployment checks. You have some businesses getting millions of dollars, and everything is running smooth, and people are spending money like crazy, buying things, but nothing is being produced. So then what happens? Well, now you have a supply chain mess because everyone's buying all the stuff in stores. However, no business is able to produce anything because the economy shut down. So the supply chain issue then you start to see is a byproduct of the inflation, because everyone's trying to blame, oh, the inflation is happening because of supply chain issues. But you have to look at what is the real root cause. The inflation is what causes the supply chain issues. How do you decide who gets that money or not? I mean, they're printing money. Somebody's got to pay for that. Who's paying for it? Regular people, average people, because now it's a hidden tax. Because the government can't just spend money without somebody paying for it. They have to generate the tax dollars. If they don't pay it through tax dollars, somebody's still going to have to pay a tax. And inflation now is a hidden tax. It's a silent tax. It affects the people who don't understand money, and it disproportionately affects the poor and the financially uneducated.
So boom, you pick one. And then from there, I always say six figures is sell something to someone. That's it. And if you want more detail, sell something to someone. So it's one avatar, one product, one channel. So you don't have to figure out, how do I create 20 pieces of content across? It's like, just pick one channel, one media source, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you know, whatever, Twitter. Consistently start going on that, whether that's cold outbound, whether that's content, whether it's running paid ads, whether it's affiliates, word of mouth, whatever it is. Start reaching out to people there to start selling your stuff. You have to learn how to advertise, which I define as the process of making known. So how do you let other people know about the stuff you sell? And then once people engage with whatever advertisement you have to sell them. So advertising is the first skill, selling them is the second skill. And then product would be the third skill, which is the thing that you're ultimately advertising and selling. So usually once people do it in the beginning, they're sporadic, they're not consistent with it. Just the act of doing the same thing every day usually gets people to 100,000 a month, which sounds crazy to probably people listening, but most people who think that's crazy also haven't done it consistently for an extended period of time. And so I use something that I call the rule of 100, which is 100 primary actions, whether that's 100 minutes of content creation per day, 100 reach outs per day, $100 of ad spend per day. You have to pick one of them, but 100 per day, and you do that for 100 days, and I promise you you'll be making six figures. Also, I feel like two parts of the audience that like follow my stuff. I've got the business owners who are trying to scale their business, et cetera, and then I've got all the people who want to start a business, and usually they're a little bit younger and whatnot. And I think there's a misnomer around like education. And so a lot of them, I don't know how explicit I can be, but like they mentally masturbate to watching lots and lots of videos. They, you know, want the pump up speeches, they buy the tickets to the things. And I think that they think that exposure to information is learning. And I don't think that's true, or at least it hasn't been for me.
That's definitely not true.
And so when I do the original rule of 100 and whatnot, it's because I think it's the most effective way to learn, which is you force yourself on the one controllable that you have, which is the activities that you can take. And then it goes with the underlying assumption that you go off feedback and you're like, well, that opening message did not work, right? And then I think most people have a dramatic underestimation of how much volume it takes to be successful. You get the skill from the volume, the feedback from the volume. And there's all these like little things. I'm sure it's like from the exercise world because you come from that. Like when you squat, the first time you squat, you're orienting yourself to your environment. You're barely actually squatting. You're just looking like you have a bar on your back. But you learn so much between that first rep and your 10,000th rep of squats. And so I think for most people, it's like, if I can just decrease the action threshold for people to begin and be okay with the fact that they're going to suck, and it is okay to suck. It is, you should expect to suck. And it would be unreasonable for you to be good if you haven't done it before. There's three traits that people, when they looked at, because they were trying to find habits of highly successful people, and when they actually pulled apart, it's not, and I hope I'm not contradicting anything, but there's people who are really rich who wake up really late and work really late, and there's people really rich who wake up really, really early, and there's people who are really rich who eat really healthy, and there's people really rich who drink Coca-Cola and eat french fries every day. And so there's all these things that we want to make as truths, but there's easy examples that counter those things. So it's like, what are the few things that are true, or at least that seem to be present in all of the situations? And it seems as though there were surprisingly few. And so the three common traits that they had, that they had found were, one, that people have superiority complex. They believe they're better than others, and they believe that they deserve more than everyone else does, and that they can accomplish big goals, right? So they have a bigger vision because they believe they deserve it, or whatever it is, that they were able to identify that. The second thing that they were able to identify is that they had crippling insecurity, and which is a paradox of paradoxes. They feel they'll never be enough, and they'll always be measured against the things that they've achieved. And so you've got this crazy dynamic between they think they're better than everyone, they think they deserve more, they want to go after this big hill, and at the same time, they fear they'll never be good enough, and they'll never actually achieve it, and they actually suck. And then the third piece, which kind of adds the beautiful like mix of this, is impulse control. And so they're able to control their actions and focus on a single thing for an extended period of time. And so if you put those three things together, it's like you've got a big goal that's pulling you this way. You've got this big fear that you are running away from. And then you've got impulse control to keep you focused on the one thing that matters. And if you do that, if you are the type of person who has those traits, then you are very likely to be successful. If you can wait a year, you can make a ton of money. Like if you can do something for 12 months, you do not need for financial goodness pretty much for the rest of your life. I'm not saying you're gonna be hella rich, but you're not gonna need for anything if you can wait 12 months. If you can wait a decade, you're going to be above the 1%. If you can wait 10 years for an outcome, be able to do the doing without seeing the result, you will be able to be above any most achievement of most people. And if you can wait a lifetime and you don't even need to see the result of your doing this, even while you are alive, but know that it may get done after you pass, then I believe that you can change the world.
How you have thoughtful disagreement, how you listen to maybe you're not good at that or not, how you learn, how you navigate all the ways through that so that you get stronger. Because if you don't struggle, you won't get stronger. First of all, if you do make your passion and your work the same thing, then it's great, right? Because your passion, whatever it might be, you're a painter or you're an entrepreneur or whatever that is, and you find that more enjoyable than going to a ball game, let's say, then that becomes a passionate thing. That's one thing. Second, to know how to work with people who can do things really well, to get the most leverage out of people, okay? Third, how do you get yourself really, what are the right work habits? How do I get it done without me doing it? Who's the best to do it and how do I get it? Oh, you all of a sudden you open yourself to all different possibilities of how you can do that, right? No time. I think Tim Ferriss wrote, what, the 4 minute or the 4 hour?
Work week
or something. There are approaches, all those ways of being able to do that. So I just gave you a few. If you want self-discovery, then you'll find your ways of getting the self-discovery. They'll appear all around you. And yes, you have your nature, the thing that pulled. Don't be a round peg in a square hole. Find your nature, what's going to flourish and make your. That's why I said when you were talking about your development, mine too, make your passion and your work the same thing. Know what your nature is. Yes, so I believe in terms of that particular nature. Then we get to the particular of one of the big choices in life is savor life or accomplish. Like we have a lot of choices in our lives and they're almost sort of mutually exclusive sometimes. I want to go to the ball game and I want to watch a movie and I want to do that and I just want to sit back and on a nice day and smell the roses. Okay, simultaneously, I want to change the world. Okay, I want to change the world and I've got this. Or the work-life balance question and all of those. We face those types of choices, right? So it's really important to go above oneself and to reflect on that. And also, by the way, to realize that the choices are not, you're approaching the choice wrong when you often see it as kind of that trade-off, because the truth is you can have a lot more life and you can have a lot more if you just know how to get more out of a minute. If you worry, you don't have to worry. And if you don't worry, you have to worry. Okay? Because what I mean is, if you're worrying about what can go wrong, chances are you will create the protections against that thing going wrong, and therefore that's good. And if you're not worrying about the things that are going to go wrong, then they'll probably, the things you never expect are going to come and hit you. Okay? And so it sounds counterintuitive. If you worry, you don't have to worry. And if you don't worry, you better worry. But what it means is that process of, okay, go to the thing, go to it, and enjoy it. View these things as puzzles. Your personality will change. You'll enjoy it, okay? Because life is a puzzle. It's a going through the jungle, okay? It's like that. I'll tell you a story. Yeah. So I crash, and I figure, oh, risk and reward go together. You want to have a great life, okay, and you want to be safe at the same time. They sound almost like mutually exclusive, okay? So I viewed it as, okay, I'm like sitting on one side of a jungle, and that if I can get to the other side of a jungle safely, I'll have a great life. But okay, but if I cross the jungle, ooh, all sorts of things are going to happen. Now, what am I going to choose? Am I going to be on this side of the jungle and have just an ordinary life? Or am I going to have what I think is the best life possible, but ooh, I can get bit and all those things. And that's just the nature of life. And then I said, I have to, it's my nature, I have to have the best life I can have. So I've got to go into the jungle. Now the question is, how do I go into that jungle and be successful at that? And I could tell you the answer. The answer is, first, by worrying about what I don't see that I might be wrong with, and to do it with people who see the things that I might not see, and we are all doing it as a mission to get through that jungle well together.
I'm now married to my dream girl. I'm a multimillionaire. I live in a dream house. I have dream cars, dream boats, dream motorhomes. I have a ski mountain. I have a golf course. Everything I ever dreamed of. But I wasn't happy. And when I wasn't happy in this world of just enough, everything became a trade or negotiation. Even giving, right? I would give to receive recognition, acknowledgement, business development. And I'm sure you know people like that, that live in this world of for me, and they seem very optimistic and philanthropic, but usually they live in that world of a void, a shortage, and an obstacle that I did. And I was always in search of happiness, buying things to be happy, buying more things to be happy, buying things to impress people for their approval, buying more things to impress people that I didn't even like. I had to come to grips that I had become a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, an overseller, a back-end seller. And that I sat there that day taking stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. This is 2 years earlier than me losing everything. I will tell you, if somebody asked me about my bankruptcy at that time, imagine having to ask your mom to move because you forgot to take the house out of her. The only reason I want to be rich is for my mom. Only one reason I want to be rich is to buy her that house and a car. And I have to tell her, hey, you need to move out of your house because I lost your house. And I would tell you at that moment, it may have been one of the most challenging, painful things in my entire life. But here I am 14 years later to tell you it's the best thing or one of the best things that's happened to me. Without that bankruptcy, without that experience, I would either be divorced or dead. So I'd already learned the lessons, I was practicing them, but there's still that reality of, oh my gosh, I went from owning 33 homes in San Diego alone to a rented house, rented furniture, a pregnant wife with three daughters under 10. What am I gonna do? And I gotta tell my mom she's moving. I have really messed this up. And in some respects, I was more equipped, but in others, it was like, okay, I already got the lessons, why are you punishing me? And when I laid there in bed that day of filing bankruptcy and keeping it secret, so I wasn't the person that I am today, I illuminate all my right? I am who I am, you're either gonna love me for who I am, but you're not gonna, literally, you're not gonna love me for who I'm not. You can hate me for who I am, but you're not going to love me for who I'm not. I am. I'm going to tell you the truth and illuminate to the best of my ability, spend minutes and moments outside of the truth, minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness. That's the secret sauce of what I do. But when I lied there in bed, it was another coincidence because tears were rolling down my face. I could not lift up my arms. Right? It was harder almost because I knew the lessons. It wasn't like I was in that ignorant arrogance where I was in blame, shame, and justification. I was lying there being accountable, and that's hard. And at that time, accountability still was tied to what did I do to attract this to myself? What am I supposed to learn? It's evolved to what did I do to participate in it or the perception of it, and what am I supposed to learn? But I remember Like, I wanted to get up. TV was on, almost like The Jacket. One of my favorite movies is Rocky. And so I'm lying there, completely crushed. And I turn it on, and there's Rocky I. The end of the movie's on, and it's that scene, the music's going, I'm crying, and Apollo Creed is just beating Rocky. And I don't know if you remember the scene, he's hanging, and then he gets to the ground, and Adrian's in the back, and he's sitting there, and he couldn't get up. Six, right, and Mickey's like, stay down, right, and everyone else, get up, and Rocky, and I'm sitting there, I'm down, and I'm watching him, and he looks up. I see it, he looks up. Somehow, the music going, and he gets back up, right? And then he pops Apollo in the ribs, and that round ends, the second to the last round. And the movie continues on to eight more movies or whatever. I think to myself, what if he didn't get up? What if that movie ended, that he was just crushed? He had learned all the lessons. Remember, he went through all the different lessons in the movie that made us root for him, love him. But that one moment of bankruptcy, he had a decision to make. If I can look up, buy on all buddy, everybody else, I'm gonna get up. And because he got up, we all know what happened in the other eight movies. I wanted to see what's gonna happen in the other eight movies for me.
Money buys a lot of loyalty in business. You know, people don't want to disrupt that. And it's true on the street. I think it's true in real life too. You know, in that world, everything is very technical. For instance, rules of a sit-down. Let's make you and I are made guys. We're having an argument. You're lying through your teeth. Lying, every other word is a lie. If I call you a liar, I lose the argument automatically. If I get upset with you and lose my temper, I lose the argument automatically. You gotta know how to keep your mouth shut. You gotta be able to outsmart that person, right? And don't let him make you fall into a trap. Because a lot of times, if an old timer was wrong, he's trying to get you into a trap, so on technicalities, you lose.
I learned so many things. I mean, as far as navigating that life, you know, my dad taught me, you know, always be, you know, don't ever be quick to judge somebody. Don't ever be quick to, you know, condemn somebody. He told me how to be a good listener. But, you know, he taught me, he said to me, Michael, and this was very valuable in that life. He said, if you and I committed a crime, we did it together. He said, 1 minute after we commit the crime, if you talk to me about it, I'm going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, there's no reason to ever repeat anything that you did the wrong way. You know, he said, look at every telephone as a cop. Don't speak on the phone. You know, be careful. So he taught me so many things that they seem like little things, but they were major in that life. You know, I never aspired to be a mob guy. That wasn't what I wanted. I mean, I always say, you know, I was going to be a doctor. I mean, I had a real interest in that. I was an athlete. But, you know, I grew up with my father, who was a very high-profile guy in the 60s. And I love my dad very much. And he went through several trials in the 60s until finally he got convicted on a major federal case and sentenced to 50 years in prison. And, you know, I needed to help him out because he said to me, Mike, I'm framed. You know, they said that he ordered a series of bank robberies throughout the country. He said, Mike, I'm not a bank robber. It's not true. The government framed me. And I believed him. And he saw my involvement in his life as a way to help him out. So he proposed me for membership. It's not something that I would have done anything he wanted me to do. It's okay, Dad, you want me to become a member? I'll become a member. It's not like, oh, I wanted it. This is what he wanted for me. Once I got in, I said, hey, I'm going to be the best possible mob guy I can be. And I tried to use the life as best I could to benefit me in business. And that's how I looked at it. You know, so things like that in the street are very valuable. And I took those things with me, you know, in my life today. You know, I try to give people respect. You know, it doesn't matter who they are. Another thing my dad taught me, Brian, he said, always be respectful to the little guy. Now, he didn't mean the little guy to be offensive. He just meant, you know, give respect to the little guy, the waiter, take good care of him, the guy at a valet parker, take care of him.
Does that apply to the real world? Look, when people are making money with you, they're happy. I mean, that's the way it is, you know, they're happy. I mean, money buys a lot of loyalty in business, you know. People don't want to disrupt that. And it's true on the street, and I think it's true in real life, too.
I had a lot of legitimate businesses going. I had two car dealerships. I had a number of restaurants that I had opened at the time. I had a leasing company. I had a production company in Southern California, in Hollywood. So I had a lot of things going. So I used some of that money to, you know, to have a legitimate operation and income. Let me tell you one thing about, you know, mob guys. They're pretty resourceful. You know, I'm asked all the time, you know, is the mob still in existence? The answer is yes. It's not the same as it was during my time, but I wouldn't count these guys out. They're not going away in my lifetime, that's for sure.
You know, in that world, everything is very technical. They make a mountain out of a molehill. Well, in my world, you can pay serious consequences. You can't be disrespectful in that life, Patrick. You know, two guys that actually took the oath. You can never disrespect one another, never. I mean, you know,
two made guys could never disrespect one another.
Never disrespect.
So what does disrespect mean?
Calling a guy a name, calling him a liar, raising your voice to him.
Really?
Yeah.
A made guy cannot to a made guy.
No. That's a major, because the life allegedly is built on respect. So you can never disrespect anybody. You can never outwardly do it. Like, I'll be honest with you, I had a meeting with another made guy once, and he's trying to get involved in the gas business, and I'm trying to keep him out. He was a guy from my own family, but he was trying to make a deal with Gotti to bring them into the business, and I didn't want him. So I said, can I talk to you a minute? And this guy's doing life in prison right now. So we go in the other room, and we get in the other room. I called him every name in the sun. You're a liar, you're this, you're that. When we walk out, we're shaking hands, you're the best guy in the world. But I wouldn't let anybody see it, because now if he told anybody I called him that, I'd call him a liar. So they had to believe me, you know what I mean? The same way they had to believe him. So he would never try to challenge that. But no, in that life, you can never be disrespectful to one another. No matter what it is, you had to just bite your tongue and try to outsmart the guy. When I'm able to, I do my due diligence. I want to know the personality, the character of the people I'm in with. But there's times when I'll test somebody, I'll throw out a word or two that I know is false, and I'll see how he responds. If he wants to make me think I know what I'm talking about, I'll say something that has nothing to do with anything or is totally absurd, and we'll see how they answer. And sometimes they'll give you an answer and you can start to, you know, they'll indicate to you what kind of personality they are and really what you have. The main thing is just let people talk first. Try to get as much out of them as you possibly can, and then you can kind of figure it out.
Explain that basic idea of ownership for people that might not quite put it together that stocks really are owning that company.
Mm-hmm. So I actually got that term from Warren Buffett in one of his meetings. I want to say it was a 1995 shareholder meeting. And he said that owning a stock is owning a percentage of a great business. And so once I understood that concept, I understood that the key to wealth is through ownership. Took my time, I researched the Warren Buffetts and the Peter Lynch's, and I'm not gonna lie, in the beginning, that was like Chinese to me, right? This is a foreign language. And so what happened to me was it started reminding me of being in the streets, everything about it. And I heard this term one time that said, the real gangsters are on Wall Street, the real gangsters are in the government. And I was like, damn.
Started really getting into it, like, all right, yo, this makes sense. Like, damn, I see why they don't teach us this. This shit powerful. Like 70% of everything that we use and consume with our money is on the stock market. Mm-hmm. Like everything. So I'm like, damn, like, all right, cool. All right, it makes sense to me now. Like even the brands that we wear, Louis Vuitton, LVMH, third richest man in the world. Louis Vuitton owns Louis Vuitton. They own Dior. Mm-hmm. They own
Hennessy,
mm-hmm. Moet.
Yeah.
Like, yo, like, let's own it. And oftentimes, the stock is cheaper than the product.
So if I know that waste management is a company that's going to be here forever because we aren't going to stop throwing things away, why don't I own that company? Because I know everybody throws things away. And so now, instead of me getting excited about Apple Lime being around the corner because it's a new phone, I'm like, yo, y'all about to make me some money. Right? So when I hear a company like Waste Management has bought 40 acres of disposable land for another landfill, I'm excited about that. And another great thing about the stock market is, for me, it now makes me pay attention to the world. And so now I understand what's going on in the world. I started learning business cycles, market cycles. You know what I'm saying? Like, because now I can understand, yo, this is okay. Things are going out of business. This is, okay, we're in this cycle. Okay, people are hiring. Okay, we're in expansion cycle. And so now I took an economic class on my own without just understanding the world. And so you start understanding when something is happening in China. Okay, something happening in China. So I own Apple. Apple has 20% of their revenue in China. Okay, they might take a little hit right now. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. The stock market helped me start understanding how the world moves, the fundamentals.
Right?
And so that's important. In prison, we fight for like 4 hours.
Jesus.
Back to back. I'm just fighting one after another one. Like, we just fighting. And I go to solitary confinement. And at this time, all these parish prisons is considered like one of the worst parish prisons in the United States of America, right? And I go to the cell and I meet this white guy. That was the turning point of my life. I get in the cell with him and I'm frustrated, like I'm kind of bust up. And he sees me and I guess he's in awe of the idea of so many black people are in this position. He says something to me, he says, man, y'all playing the wrong game. And so in my mind, like, I'm frustrated. I'm like, man, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, bro, like, don't make me whoop your ass in here right now. Like, and he's like, no. He's like, listen, bro, I don't mean no harm, no disrespect. But y'all, like, why? So I guess he's, like, perplexed by this whole dynamic of all of these black men in here. And I'm like, man, what are you talking about, man? Like, this ain't no game. Like, it's real. And so he says something. He said, that's the problem. Y'all don't even know it's a game. And so when he told me that, I'm like it's something about when you mad and you in the moment, but like something, when it makes sense, it hits you like a ton of bricks. So I'm like, what? He was like, man, listen, man, there's a game that's being played and you're playing a game that you can't win. For a minute, I just start thinking about the people who I knew that was in the streets. Everybody lost. Everybody suffered the same fate. There was nobody in the street that I knew at 16 that won. Everybody I knew had either been to prison, been shot, got killed, their father, like everybody suffered the same fate. So my rebuttal to him is this: well, if it's such of a game and you know the rules, why are you here with me?
It's a good question.
Right? He says, I'm in here, $2.8 million embezzlement. I paid $800,000 restitution. I kept $2 million. Have you ever seen $2 million? I'm like, man, get the fuck out of here. You fucking lying. So one thing about prison and in jail, you can show your paperwork. Like, you can lie all you want, but your paperwork tells me. So I said, let me see your paperwork then. So in New Orleans, I had a red band. So a red band means attempt murder, armed robbery, kidnapping, carjacking, violent offense. He has on a red and white band at the time. The red and white band means you're in federal custody. And it's crazy because in prison or in jail, like, if you get a federal band, it's like a hierarchy. It's like, you know something that we don't know, you next level, right? So he showed me his paperwork and it's right there in black and white. And immediately he got my attention. Because the red and white band makes me respect you a different level at 16, but then when I see it in your paperwork, I had never seen $2.8 million written down nowhere.
Right?
So that changes my idea, like, damn. So tell me, how do I do what you do? I realized how powerful it was for me to, one, become economically, like, powerful in my mind. Because the thing about investing, especially in stocks, is that piece of ownership of everything that I use now makes me say, well, if I own that Apple, God, I don't care about buying an Apple phone. If I'm gonna wear Levi's and I'm gonna wear Timberlands, if I can own VFC Corp, then I own the stuff that I'm buying. I'm okay with that. Like, that subtle shift in my mindset changed everything for me. Because now I was after just owning everything that I consumed. In the beginning, that was my introduction to the game. Let me just own everything I consume and then I'll feel okay.
You know, it just sold for $800 million. So that's how I learned about money.
The reason I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad was because I knew this time was coming. And we have, as a world, have never been here before. And so is it a spooky time? Damn yeah. It is probably the most dangerous time ever. There's nothing to compare it to. because there's never been a world economy before. For example, you know, 100 years ago, if there was a stock market crash in England, it didn't affect anybody. Mm. But now the U.S. market goes down, the world goes down. So plus with social media and all this we're doing now, and so we've never been here before. And, you know, I'm excited about it because I make more money in crashes than I do when they go up. So, but for the average person, they'll get wiped out. I'm afraid at the worst, I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're heading for a global depression.
How does this play out for the average worker, Robert, for the small business owner? I mean, what does the next 3 months look like? Because it doesn't look pretty. I mean, people are already being laid off, made redundant. Businesses are, there's no cash flow in most of these businesses. How does that play out?
Well, let me give one more stat just to give you the size of it, okay? The national debt for World War II was $25 billion. Every day today, they're printing $125 billion. Every single day, that's like five World War IIs per day, they're printing so much money to keep this, think of a hot air balloon with a tear in it. And they're doing desperately trying to fix this tear, but it, no matter how hard they try, the tear has gone beyond, it's coming down. So in financial terms, it's called our debt to GDP has now gone from 60 to 90 to 105, it's going to 120. We're bankrupt. And they're gonna print more and more money, which means savers are losers, just as I predicted. Your money is gonna be worthless in a few years. Wow. So, my message is the same as some of your other guests. This is metamorphosis type. Financial education, in Rich Dad's terms, is really financial transformation. And definition of metamorphosis is very important. Metamorphosis, the definition is the evolution or the transformation from an immature form to an adult form. An immature form to an adult form. Metamorphosis is the same as a caterpillar turning into a butterfly. And Fuller always said there's nothing to predict a butterfly inside a caterpillar. So everybody listening right now, if you're struggling financially, just think of yourself as a little caterpillar. And this crisis is your cocoon. The question is, what do you emerge as? Do you emerge as a victim? You know, the world did it to me and the capitalists are crook and the rich are bastards and all this stuff. Or do you say, oh, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. The same as my health. I am ground zero for the coronavirus. All that does is inspire me to get healthier. You're either gonna get healthier and wealthier, or you're gonna go bust. Your choice. It sits between your ears, your heart, your body, your mind, your spirit, your attitude. This could be the best thing that ever happened to you. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, if you turn out to a butterfly or somebody will step on you like a little worm, it's your choice.
If you could say one thing to somebody who's never been an entrepreneur and they're thinking about making the leap of faith into becoming an entrepreneur, what could you tell them?
Well, I'll just tell them the same thing that happened to me. You know, my last paycheck, I still remember it clearly. It was one of the worst and the best days of my life. And I was in Puerto Rico. I was working for Xerox. And my boss gave me my last, it wasn't a paycheck, it was a bonus check. I think it was about 30,000 bucks taxable. That's the only problem with that. So I got this check and I went, holy mackerel. You know what I mean? So I was excited, but I was also disturbed. And so this other guy comes up to me, his name was John. And John says to me, he says, you're gonna be back. I said, why? He says, because you're gonna fail. I looked at him and said, look, few expletive words, because that's what he did. He left Xerox, failed, and he came back. And I said, look, da-da-da, you failed and you came back, but I'm gonna fail and I'm never coming back. And that's the attitude. Do you know what I mean? If you say, well, if I fail, I'll go back to mommy and daddy, then that's what you'll do. So if you fail, that's when I became an entrepreneur because I had no money. I had no money for years. You know, I didn't have a paycheck. But that's what my rich dad encouraged me to do. He says, when you don't have this paycheck, you get hungrier, smarter, and it's a test of your character.
How do you learn the art of the sit-down? because that's part politics, like part journalism. Sounds like some of the interviews I've had when I was running to be mayor. Like they're trying to trip you up. If you say the wrong one thing, that's the thing that'll kill you. Like how do you learn how to negotiate that?
A lot of it is experience. You know, you make mistakes in the beginning, but I was fortunate. I had my dad who schooled me well, and you know, who taught me basically how to conduct myself in these things. And you know, one thing, Brian, the major thing my dad taught me that has worked for me my entire life, and in a serious way, I'll get into it, is be a good listener. Don't run your mouth. Don't be the first to, you know, present you. Just be a good listener. Let the other guy make a mistake. Think, you know, hard. Be prepared going in. And for me, I became a major target of law enforcement. Major target. They never got me on tape saying anything wrong. Never. There was one undercover operation they had me on. They had 83 tape recordings on me. It was this whole thing with Don King and Al Sharpton. They couldn't use one of them because I never made a mistake on the tape because I was always listening. I was careful how I spoke. And I credit my father in listening to him. You know, okay, I understand it, Dad. You know, so you got to be careful who you talk to. Same thing in a sit down. Let the guy present himself. You know, I always say this too. You go into a meeting, sometimes you're the smartest guy in the room, but you don't want anybody to know it. Let them think you're a dummy. You don't know anything. And they're yapping away, right? It's a big advantage. There's other times when you're not the smartest guy in the room. But if you keep your mouth shut, nobody knows that. They don't know it. So you let them talk, commit themselves. By the time they're finished, then you can become the smartest guy in the room because they told you everything, you know. Here's the thing. It's all about the media. It's all about entertainment. I mean, look, when The Godfather came out, guys on the street were acting different because it elevated the persona of guys on the street in a big way. I'm telling you, I witnessed it. I watched it. All of these movies, I speak to young kids. Michael, come on, man. You know, you had the cars, you had the money, you had all the women, you had people catering to you all the time. I said, I know. That was Goodfellas, right? Did you watch the second half of the movie? Who got killed? Who lost everything? Who went to jail? They don't see that. They only see the money, the power, and that's an aphrodisiac to people. Brian, when I first started speaking, I get out of jail. I was pretty well known in New York. We had a hot name. Maybe on the West Coast, Florida, yes, because where I got indicted there too. In the Midwest, Texas, nobody knew who I was. They put on a marquee, the mob guy is going to be there, standing room only. People are interested in the lifestyle. It's all the media, Hollywood, entertainment, the news. I mean, John Gotti, come on. You know, how many people wanted to be John Gotti? How many people wanted to be Michael Corleone, Vito Corleone? It's the media.
Because they see the upside, but they don't see what comes.
They don't see the, and they don't pay attention to it.
You actually had a lot of stuff going on with, you had stuff going on with dealerships, you own all these different things with cars.
Patrick, I bought a Mazda agency when you couldn't give a Mazda away.
I remember reading
because
that.
Because the Wankel engines were exploding, you couldn't give one away. And I built that into the biggest agency on Long Island, as far as Mazda was concerned. And it was a lot of work, and I had to do things differently, but I was able to build it. I think I had a head for business, I had a knack for it. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not the smartest business guy around because there's a lot of things in business I don't enjoy doing. But there were certain talents that I had that worked well for me. And I always tell people this. When you're in business, I don't think it's a good thing to micromanage because nobody can do everything good. But here's the deal. Do what you do best and delegate the rest. And then be a good, you know, watcher of these people. Make sure you get the most out of them. That's how you do it.
You know, it's you can't hang out with the wrong people and be accountable to the wrong people, continue to do the wrong things and think it's going to end up okay. You know, it's the definition of insanity, you know, keep doing the same wrong thing, think you're going to have a different outcome. So, you know, and I look, in this life I have found out, number one, we are who we hang out with. We're judged by the people we surround ourselves with and who we are accountable to. When I was on the street, I was accountable to my oath, to my boss. I was a criminal. Every day of my life on the street, I'm violating the laws of God and the laws of man because that's who I was accountable to. Now, you know, with the grace of God, I've been able to, you know, transform that part of my life. I'm accountable to God, to my wife, to my children, to people that trust me. So I'm on the right path. I try to stay on it. But, you know, remember this. You know, it's what I tell these guys, too. You can take the boy out of Brooklyn. can't always take Brooklyn out of the boy. I have the same instincts that I've had. They don't go away. You know, sometimes I want to deal with things the wrong way, but I catch myself, you know, as much as I can.
So I say the key to building wealth is not how much you can work. You can't work your way to wealth. You got to invest your way to. And all wealthy people, black, white, Asian, Chinese, they own a whole bunch of shit. The people who aren't wealthy is because they don't own nothing. You only have your money sitting in cash. If your money is just sitting in cash, realistically, you're becoming poorer every day. Some people actually fear success. Success comes with a lot, right? But until you can overcome that average reality that you're living in, no matter what you're on, once you become comfortable there, it becomes average. Anyone can live in average. Everyone can live in mediocrity, right? Then there's those outliers who consistently push themselves to go to the next level. Knowledge is what gives us leverage in life. It's not about how strong you are. It's about what you can learn. And then how can you actively apply that? The more money they print, the more money that money loses value. It's the reason why the bank wants you to have your money there, so they can take it and use it and invest it so much and be like, hey, it's just sitting, I'm gonna give you 50 cents on whatever you had in there.
Right.
And so the idea of ownership was, yo, we can just start owning everything that we, no matter if it's just a stock. Like, that's powerful, because if you can start owning the businesses that you now consume every day, you turn a one-time transaction to a lifetime of profit. And that was major for me, because if I go to the store and buy a pair of Nikes, that's a one-time transaction. In order for me to get something from them again, I got to come back and buy another pair of Nikes. But if I own the Nike stock, long as I own it, it's a profitable vehicle for me. So that one-time transaction can become a lifetime of profit if I own that business. If I'm gonna buy Apple, if I know I'm an Apple user, if I know I got the phone, I got the AirPods, I got the MacBook, I got the PC, I'm excited when Apple's about to drop something, why wouldn't I own it? So he said, wealthy people stop trading time for money. They start making their money work for them, and they give value to as much value to people as they can. The caveat, we got a little deep into that. He said, the reason why you give people so much value is because if you give them so much value, they'll never leave you, and they'll always be there for you, and you will never need for anything as long as you give value to people. Wealthy people, first they get into stocks, then they start a business, and then they get real estate. As long as you believe in it, like you said, the only belief that matters is, what do you believe you can do? I personally believe that there is nothing I cannot do. And for me, it's all about impact, purpose, fulfillment. Like, the money is a byproduct of everything else. That isn't my focus. My focus is I have a knowledge and information that I know that can change lives. Not just one life, not just like lives. And so the way that you change lives is by consistently learning, finding new ways to put that information out there, being able to open up, being able to be vulnerable, because people need to connect. So like, just coming up in the streets, you only see the game from the lowest level. And you look at everybody else in part admiration and part like jealousy, because you see it and you're like, damn, I'll never get there. Right? And so the only way that I think I can get that is through sports or hustling. That's it. That's the only, or rapping. Those are the only three options that you have. And so you make a decision on which way you want to go. Right? And so you look at it from like, damn. And so me, I'm at the time like, man, I can't rap. Damn sure I can't play sports. So hustling is what I got. You limit yourself, and nobody comes along and teaches you anything different. The reason why people think wealthy people or people with money are sinister is because that's what you kind of taught in the hood. Like, you kind of taught like the people who really have money, like they did some wicked shit to get it. They did some backstabbing, cutthroat shit to get it, and you'll never get that, right? And so that same mentality now happens on a lower level, right? The hustling, the dope dealing. So now you think like, yo, I gotta just do sinister shit to get money. And then the people who are successful in the drug game, they're looking at the people at the top like, damn, I wanna be that. But the people at the bottom will never get a taste of that. And so now we just kind of living off ambition. And so now the people who are in the middle who work in, they're like, all them people with money, they all crooks. They all, because being at the bottom teaches you to envy people at the top. it just happens. It's something that grooves down there, right? It's kind of like you cook. I don't know if you had gumbo before, right? But it's kind of when you cook food, right? The base goes to the bottom. And so most people live in that bottom, never knowing how they'll get up there. No one now believes that it's possible. Once you keep passing that down, you start accepting the lower level. And then there's a few of us or a few people who say, nah, I'm an outlier, yo. Like, I'm about to go for it. And then whatever happens, I'm with that shit.
Rich people don't waste time. They realize it's their most important commodity. They don't watch a lot of TV. They don't do a lot of entertainment. If they're not working, they're studying their craft and getting better at their craft.
So I went to Oakwood College. And when I went to Oakwood, when you come in, it say enter to learn. When you leave, it said depart to serve. So I was always taught that you're supposed to outserve everybody. You know, like that was the mantra. You enter to learn. Whatever you learn, you go back and you give it. You know, so I learned that at a very early age. And then I also realized when I start doing my work professionally that most people they're lazy, or most people won't work until, you know what I'm saying, until you do something for them. So you go in the mall, my man, you know, he's sitting there with the plate boy. He the only one. Everybody else, try fried rice. A little spoon boy for you. Try, tear up your chicken. You like, bro, I'm good on that. Like, I'm not hungry. You walk, my man's still with you. Like, bro, get this. I'm like, bro, I just told you I'm good. No. Orange chicken then. Try the orange chicken. I'm like, bro, right? They doing more than everybody in that joint. They hungry, bro. A lot of them don't come from this. So when they get here, they take, and so you know what happened? $5.99 for you, $5.99. Bro, you weren't even trying to eat like that, bro. Like, you weren't even hungry like that, right? And so I realized that they are going to tell you, I'm gonna let you try it first. And here's the deal. Some of y'all, you got, for real, I feel you, but you can't have your own reality. Reality is reality. There are those of you giving out your stuff and people not taking it, that means it's not worth it. So now you just gotta go back to the drawing board and try it again. Does that make sense? Some of y'all be taking it personal. Y'all give y'all stuff away for free. Give it away for free. Like, let people sample it. And then when they eat it, they go, ooh. Don't let your little feelings get hurt. Just ask the question. Was it too salty? Was it too much orange in the orange chicken? You know what I'm saying? Like, holler at me and tell me what happened. And so when we start putting our videos out, people would make comments. Some of the comments I listened to, some I didn't. But some people was like, yo, I'm feeling you, bro, but slow down. Yo, bro, I'm feeling your passion, bro, but can you put the words up? Can you put like step one, step two, step three for me? Like, for real, it was just like little tweaks. Like, yo, E, we feeling the music, bro, but we already listen to hip hop. We want to hear your message. Bring the music down or no music at all. Then we had like 20 cameras going. Folks were like, E, we don't need 6 camera shots, bro. Just one is enough. We good. So I didn't take it personal. Like, who are you to tell me what to do? I just was like, make the adjustments. And I went from nobody knowing me to being 100 in the world, 20 in the world, 10 in the world, number one in the world. So give it out. And if they don't like it, don't be offended. Take it back to the lab. Take it back where? Come on, take it back to the lab and modify it. Give it away free again if they say something. Take it back to the lab, modify it till you get to the point where everybody's like, what up, what up?
Rich people don't work, they think. Poor people work. Poor people go, clock in, I make this much an hour. Rich people go, I put them to work, and I make this much an hour. See, what happens is you're working for you and your family, one. They got 40 of you working at one time. So they're giving you 20%, and then they're keeping the 80% off of 15,000 people. That's enough to have $22 million. So what you have to decide is, are you going to keep being the 99%, or are you ready to be a part of the 1%? Because it doesn't make a difference where you come from, high school dropout. It doesn't make a difference where you come from, GED. It doesn't make a difference where you come from, sleeping in abandoned buildings. It doesn't make a difference where you come from. a 17-year-old mom that got pregnant. It doesn't make a difference where you come from, south side of Chicago. It doesn't make a difference where you come from, pretty much raised in Detroit. It doesn't make a difference where you come from, took 12 years to get a four-year degree. It doesn't make a difference. You know what makes a difference? What makes a difference is when you become a 99% or a 1%. And when I start thinking like, acting like, and behaving like a 1%er, everything changed.
If you're going to manifest in your hands what you see in your head, then you got to have the courage, the confidence, the self-belief, and the self-determination to go out every single day and make it happen. If you have to listen to this 1,000 times, understand how hustlers are wired, the psychology of a champion. Just keep moving, keep hustling, keep grinding until you no longer have to introduce yourself.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.